is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The global economy, the American economy, the Chinese economy. I welcome Joseph Sternberg, editorial board of the Wall Street Journal, as well as writing political economics column. He's based in London. His most recent column, Observing China. Once upon a time, 2009, the U.S. and the global economy was in trouble. The real estate collapse was pulling everyone down with it. And then my memory is that China snapped its fingers and $3 or $4 trillion worth of credit appeared. We could now call it a bailout. That was then. This is now. Joe, a very good evening to you. The Chinese economy is profoundly in trouble. It's very difficult to see because it's non-transparent. But you have one wry observation in your newest column about China, is that the Chinese counted on us buying everything they manufactured forever. It apparently didn't occur to them that there was a limit to what we would buy and what they could sell. So has that revelation now caught up with the leadership? Does that make them pause when they think about the troubles they have and the troubles the world has? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Well, I mean, I think that the important thing that seems to be developing in the global economy right now is that everyone is in various forms of trouble at the same time. And this is kind of unusual because typically if you sort of think of the US as one zone and Europe as one zone and Asia and particularly China as a third zone, the pattern we've been in recent decades is that one of those zones might encounter economic difficulties, but the other one or two would be doing okay, and that would help put a floor under whatever difficulty the others were experiencing. And so the most recent example that I explored in my column last week is this idea that when we in the US and Europe had our crises in 2008 in the US and then in 2010 in Europe, China really leaned hard into economic stimulus and particularly into stimulating the supply side of their economy. And that really helped out the US and Europe by kind of putting a floor under the slowdown in our economies. And I think that the key point is that that is probably not going to happen in the same way this time around, if indeed the US is headed for some kind of recession, because we're discovering that there are now a lot of weaknesses in China's own economy. I mean, we've now had several months where their manufacturing sentiment seems to be declining. The services industries are in a lot of trouble. There's a limit on the potential for economic growth in China that's imposed by the Communist Party tamping down political control of the economy. You have geostrategic tensions with the U.S., especially over Taiwan, which are going to interfere with the trading relationship that was so important there. And so I think that this is bad news for China, but it's also going to be bad news for Europe and the US, because that means that if we find ourselves slowing down economically or for the next year or two, we're going to have to dig ourselves out of the hole by ourselves. We won't have that assist from Beijing that we had the last time.
And better for it. But I want to stay with China because you publish one statistic that we have about unemployment. I don't know why we have it, because as I understand, in China, the rules are flexible. For example, I'm told that if you work 1 hour a week, you're considered employed. That's fudging a little bit. But we do have this number. Urban youth unemployment is at least 20% or higher. What does that mean for China right now and China for the future? Is that a doom loop as well for the next 10 years?
Well, that is symptomatic of a major problem in the Chinese economy, because that urban youth unemployment is particularly acute among university graduates, who are the people who you would expect to have the least amount of trouble finding work in an economy that is aspiring to become a high-tech service-oriented economy. And yet, something seems to be misfiring where the labor market is not matching the demand for labor to the supply of all of these very educated, very talented young people that are coming through. And I think that there's still not an awful lot of clarity about exactly why that problem exists. But I would theorize that one difficulty there actually is the political control of the economy. I mean, those college grads should be working for a lot of entrepreneurial startup companies or engaged in a lot of entrepreneurial activity themselves in what should be a booming tech and service economy. And yet China doesn't have that kind of economy because Xi Jinping and the Communist Party much prefers that it be an economy that is dominated by state-owned enterprises that are easier for the party to control. And that is becoming the nub of the economic growth problem that China has as it tries to emerge from the pandemic. It's also going to become a bit of a political and a social problem because, I mean, the question is going to be what will happen to all of these young people in the cities who have gone to university and now discover that there are not economic opportunities for them.
You mentioned the SOEs. My memory, Joe, is that there was a moment sometime in the last 12 years where the decision was made, no more private enterprise, no more entrepreneurs without party control. But my memory also is that that's where the growth was coming. That's where the profit was. That's where the excitement was. Is that a good memory, or am I telling a fairy tale?
No, you're absolutely right about what the story there has been. And I think the timing on this is very important. A lot of it dates to 2012 when Xi Jinping first came to power. And brought with him a much more statist, politicized vision of how the Chinese economy should function. And that's going to be important to understanding this global story as well, because one of the reasons that China was able to effectively act as it did to put a floor under the recessions in the US and Europe 15 years ago is because China at that point still had a very vibrant, growing private sector that was much more productive than the state-owned enterprises. And so that private sector was an engine of growth. And I think that, under Xi Jinping, the party has made it very clear that they are not interested in encouraging that kind of growth or investment activity anymore. And so that means that it would be very difficult for China to generate the kind of productivity that would help the rest of the world if, in fact, that was something that we were going to hope that China would do.
And then there's the real estate market, which you identify, the property market, which you identify as a hole that has no bottom. And that China, the Central Communist Party, has been trying to solve it for, you say, 3 years now. Is there a solution, Joe? Because what we're looking at is falsehood and deception, not credible money earners.
I mean, the problem with what they're doing with the property market right now is that they have identified absolutely the right problem that was in search of a solution, which is that previous generations of credit expansion had mainly flowed into this overinflated real estate market, and that was not sustainable, and it was doing a lot of damage to the rest of the economy and to the financial stability of a lot of middle-class households. So they were absolutely right to conclude that something needed to be done about that. But the solution has turned out in practice to be that they want to consolidate more and more of the property industry in the hands of state-owned developers so that they can control the property development industry in that way. I mean, that has been the pattern as private sector property, real estate companies end up falling into bankruptcy and then getting bought out by the state-owned actors. And that is exactly the wrong direction to be going, because what they needed was more market discipline in real estate, potentially through higher interest rates and better controls on credit for real estate. But they did not need more state control of the real estate companies. And yet that is what they are getting. And so that is going to end up creating new problems in the future rather than solving the problem they already had.
More difficulties. The consumer continues not to show up. For 20 years, I've been told repeatedly, the consumer will grow in China, and that will solve this imbalance of export to import to consumption, such as the American model. The consumer, I believe, is not now showing up. Where is the consumer in China, Joe?
Well, again, it's very difficult to say. I mean, clearly there has been some boost to consumption in the immediate aftermath of the pandemic, because it was the same phenomenon that happened everywhere in the world. People who had been in lockdown, unable to travel, unable to go to restaurants, unable to consume things, now made up for it in spades. But that already seems to be falling off a bit. And I think it's because fundamentally the Communist Party's very state-directed approach to the economy is incapable of delivering the sort of productivity and wage growth that makes people feel secure about their economic future. And I think that if you don't have productive business investment, as opposed to just a lot of unproductive business investment, if you don't have the productive investment that will feed through to growing worker productivity and increasing wages and a general better sense of well-being on the part of households, you're not going to get that kind of domestic consumption. And I think that's the thing that China has always struggled with. And you know, Xi Jinping talks a good game about shifting more of the focus onto households and making sure that they get more of the benefits of economic growth. But again, the state-owned enterprise plan for the economy is not going to be successful at doing that.
The People's Bank of China and its satellites, I'm told, when looking at it from the Belt and Road Initiative, I'm told that they've got nothing but bad loans out there that they're servicing with emergency loans. I'm guessing they're doing the same thing domestically. These banks don't have an answer except to create more credit. Are they being slowed or stopped? Does Beijing recognize that these banks are failing?
Well, I think one of the problems in general is that they're all riding the unicycle now with this legacy of the all of the credit excesses of the previous couple decades. And so I think that they do need to go through a process where they work some of that out. And I think because it's a closed financial system, they can potentially do that without the sort of big financial crisis or meltdown that usually happens in an open Western economy when you have that sort of reckoning. But the reckoning will have to happen. And I think that the struggle they're going to have is that if the momentum of credit creation slows down too much, does that create risks that the unicycle does start to totter one way or the other?
Bottom line, China is not going to rescue us. Are we going to rescue China, Joe? Can you tell?
Well, I think that the geopolitical environment is not going to help here, because I think that one of the key ways that these major economic blocs have always helped each other was free trade and free capital flows between them. And I think that certainly that free trade between the West and China is going to be very difficult moving forward, partly because Xi Jinping seems to be exacerbating tensions such as Taiwan. And I think that will probably have economic consequences both for China and for the rest of the world.
War in Europe. Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He reports from London. He writes the political economics column. Right now, the news on the news cycle is dominated by the deliberate destruction of the dam in Ukraine. What does it mean for the European economy? What does it mean in particular for London, where the reporting is very accurate, suggesting the Ministry of Defense knows what it's talking about? I'm John Batchelor.